welcome everybody to Jawanja for Life, also known as Health, Wealth, and Divine. It's a beautiful day, and I'm very, very excited to have another opportunity to chat with you this afternoon. It is that time again. As you know, if you're a regular follower to Health, Wealth, and Divine, you know that once a month we have an entrepreneurial segment just for all of you entrepreneurs out there who have been following us. I just want to say thank you so much. I see the numbers growing, and I just want to welcome all of the new listeners, and you're in for a treat today. If you are an entrepreneur, or you've thought about becoming an entrepreneur or starting a business, then this is the show for you. It's not a venture that you want to enter into lightly. It's something that you need to plan for. You need to have facts about how certain industries operate, how certain principles operate in business. You're going to need a map. You're going to need a compass. And so with that in mind, that's what this show is about. And my special guest today is an author, and he's authored an awesome book. It's called Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 102 Business Principles. Again, it's Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 102 Business Principles. That's right. I said 102 business principles. I mentioned it's not something you want to go into lightly, and there are a lot of principles that if you understand them, they can definitely help you to be successful in your business venture. So let me tell you a little bit about my guest if you're just tuning in for the very first time. My special guest is Professor Joseph T. Geiger. Currently retired, Professor Geiger grew up on a Kansas farm and graduated from the School of Business at the University of Denver. Over his lifetime, he has started 10 businesses, two which predated his college graduation. And after his second retirement, he taught entrepreneurship and small business management at J. Sargent Reynolds Community College, located in Richmond, Virginia, where he currently lives. And as I mentioned, once a month, we are very, very fortunate to have him as our resident professor and, again, author of a fabulous book. And I just can't wait to get into this interview. Again, we're talking about entrepreneurial success. We're going through the book, principle by principle. So, again, I want you to grab your paper, grab a pen, because you might want to take notes. Class is in session. Welcome back to Health, Wealth, and Divine, Professor Geiger. Great to have you back.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
You know, as I mentioned that, you know, in the intro that you actually started, you know, over 10 businesses and several businesses before you even graduated from high school. I'm sorry, not high school, but college. And so you got the bug kind of early. For those who just are tuning in for the first time, Professor, what actually got you started in business? Because, again, you started over 10 businesses, so it's something that you obviously love. And if you could share with our listeners what actually brought you to the world of entrepreneurship.
Well, I don't know that it was, in my case, I don't think, I started darn early. I started actually in high school. And I don't know that there was a whole lot of thought to it. I just saw what I now understand as an opportunity, and then kind of went from there. And so it is not like now I teach what I teach, and in my books I talk about that you ought to plan your career. But in my case, it just happened. I saw a opportunity. I grew up on a farm, and when I was in high school, I saw an opportunity, and I thought, well, I'll just try it. I'll do it. It looks like people want to do this, so I did. And then when I went to college, same thing happened. That I saw an opportunity, and in college I was a starving college student, and I was working as a busboy in a restaurant, and although the food was good, the pay was not. And I saw an opportunity to do something, and I did it, and it really, really worked out. And after that, I think it just became natural for me to look for opportunities And once you figure out how to do that, it's simple to find them. When I in class, I always challenge my students to write them down and see how many they can come up with in a week. And most of them start off by thinking, well, there's no way this will happen. And by the end of the week, they'll have three or four. And it's really that easy. You just have to know how to look for them.
You know, it's interesting, Professor. You know, when I listen to you share your experience starting in college, because I know that you probably had never had any idea that once you started your first business that you would one day be teaching entrepreneurship. You know, that goes to show how much experience that you've, you know, garnered over the years, and then to even write a book on it, an awesome book, laying out the principles of, you know, how to be successful in business. It just seems like when you first started your business, you had no idea that the journey was going to take you to where you ultimately traveled.
No, it really wasn't, because when I was in college, my father had encouraged me to specialize or have a major in geology, what now would be called petroleum engineering, because that's what he wanted me to do. And I spent 2 years at that, and then just got to the point where I frankly didn't like it. And I am a very big fan of doing what you love and what you're good at doing. And if you can find those two things together, do something that you really like doing, and if you happen to be good at it, boy, there's a home run hit. And you won't go through life thinking, thank God it's Friday, because now I can get away from this terrible job that I don't like, but I have to. Instead of that, you'll think, thank God it's Monday, because now I can go back to doing what I really like to do. And you enjoy your life better. You'll be better at it. You'll do better at it. You may or may not make more money than you could in another way, but you'll certainly enjoy your life a lot better. So I think it's important to do that, and that's kind of where I got, because certainly with the second job, I really enjoyed doing it. And after that, I frankly enjoyed all of them I were in. I enjoy building businesses. And I still do.
Well, you know, that's a beautiful thing to have found that, you know, you can actually work, get paid, and enjoy it at the same time. And, you know, for, again, this show's about entrepreneurship, and you can, you know, if you get this book, we guarantee you, I'm guaranteeing you, that if you get this book, you're going to learn so much about business. You're going to learn the right way to do it. A lot of times people have dreams of starting their own business, but once the dreaming stops and you actually have to, you know, where the rubber meets the road, and you have to actually dive in and get started, you know, there's a way to do it, and that's why this book was written. And so we're going through the book, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 102 Principles. We're going through the book principle by principle, chapter by chapter. And for those of you who are just tuning in for the first time, the shows are archived. So you can actually go back and just scroll down the archives, and where you see Professor Geiger's name, you just click on that link, and that's going to be a previous show. And you just go all the way back, and you can come up to speed. But I encourage you to get the book, okay, because in an hour, we can only cover so much, and we can only go into so much depth, but he covers everything in detail. So I encourage you to get the book. So with that said, we left off last month we actually started Chapter 6, and we got through many of the principles. And today we're going to be moving into Chapter 7, but there are a few principles in Chapter 6 that we didn't get to that are very important, too important not to cover. And so if we can, we'll start with a couple of the principles that we left off with or that we did not get to in last month's interview. And one of them is get it in writing when everyone is happy. Get it in writing when everyone is happy. In business, you got to get stuff in right. Okay, you can't just go by. Used to be able to go by handshake, but nowadays things are a bit different. Professor?
Yeah, I think that's true. And what that tells you is you start with that whenever you start with somebody, start with a new business, start with a new employee, start with a new customer, start with a new partner in not a partner in a financial sense in the business, but if you have somebody that is a supplier, you try really hard to get things in writing. And the time to do that is when you're just getting started and everybody's really happy about what you're doing. And you want to work together. Most people don't do this. So you kind of have to be the one who kicks it off, as it were. And once you do, but you also want to get the other person involved. If they're an employee, well, it's a little different. What you do is you put down what their job description is and what the understanding of what you're going to do is. It's a little easier to explain if it's a supplier, so you try to get in writing what they're going to supply, what you're going to supply, how you're going to do things, how you're going to pay for things, how they're going to deliver them, what the costs are, what the services are, and so on. And you don't have to turn this into a book, but at least as a minimum, do it as like a PowerPoint or a bullet point. And that's perhaps the best way, because you could put those down, then you take it to whoever the other side is, and you kind of say, okay, this is my understanding of what we're going to do. What did I miss? What should we put in here? And you get it in, you both of them sign it and date it. And then when a disagreement or something comes up, you can refer back to that and say, well, it looks like this is what we had originally agreed to, and I may be a little off base, and I think perhaps you're a little off base, so why don't we pull it back together with what we originally agreed to? And if you do that, there will be very much fewer problems. Unfortunately, in America, we are an extremely litigious society. In other words, there seems to be a desire for virtually everybody to want to run to an attorney in order to solve a dispute. And if you've not been in business and you've not been involved with the court system, you may think that that's a pretty decent way to do it. But I can assure you, it's a horribly expensive way to do it. And the nature of litigation is that both sides try to make the other side look bad, whether they really should or not. And you end up as enemies, and it tends to be very costly. So if you can get it in writing to start with, you can avoid some of the litigation. And like I say, once you get in business, you surely want to do that, because litigation is just horribly expensive. Juwanza, did we talk about the one above that 46, settle disputes by binding arbitration, not in court? Did we do that last time or not?
Unless we need to do that this time.
Okay.
So, yes, definitely. That is a good segue into that particular principle, Professor. Like you mentioned, all of the things that you just mentioned, I mean, it can be expensive. It could be, oh, gosh, you don't want to do it. So, yes, Professor, please. Settle disputes by binding arbitration, not in court.
Yeah, and this also starts, in order to avoid court, you want to try to start it before you ever even think about getting that way. So here again, if you're wise about it, you will start planning on not going to court. And if disputes do come up, you try to take care of those by pre-planning it. And I'll give you let's say that you're selling things, you're selling expensive items. And that they may differ. A good one is either a car or even more so a home. I sold airplanes and yachts. Each one had its own separate contract. And I learned, unfortunately, not early on, but probably about halfway through my experience in selling airplanes, that there is a way to avoid court. And since then, I've used it over and over again. And essentially, what you do is you put a statement at the bottom of every contract that says that any dispute arising from this contract, the parties agree to binding arbitration. And then both of you sign that statement and both of you date it. You want to put it in, as I say, at the bottom of every contract below the regular signature block, and it has its own signature block. The reason for that is that you do not want the situation where somebody could say, well, I didn't think that this was this agreement that I agreed to. I still could take it to court. Well, if you do it my way, where you sign the agreement, and then below that, separately, the last thing you do is you sign this this portion that forces everybody to go to binding arbitration. And it's its own separate statement with its own separate signing and its own separate date. And if you do that, well, then you'll stay out of court. Where this came up with, I was selling airplanes in California. And for those of you who live out there, you know, but if you live in Virginia or in Maryland, in the Midwest or something like that, you do not, there's no way to get a real understanding of how terribly litigious California is. California, New England, at least New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Florida are very, very litigious states, but California takes the cake. And I was running probably one lawsuit every, goodness, it must have been every 4 months, something like that. So it'd be three lawsuits a year. And at the end of a very bitter and unfortunate lawsuit, and we won it, but as we walked down the courthouse steps, I said to my attorney, is there any way that we can stop this? I am tired of these darn lawsuits. If not, I'm going to get out of this business. He said, sure. And he came up with this binding arbitration. From that day, I've never been sued. Not once. Now, I've had several people who tried, who filed lawsuits. So I guess I should say I have been sued, but they ended very quickly, because what happened is when we would get a lawsuit, we would just turn it over to our attorney. And the first thing he would do is contact the other party and say, let me send you a contract that the two parties signed so we both know what the ground rules are for this, and then we can talk again. So he would courier it over to the other side, and in 100% of the cases, the other side said, I don't think we're going to lawsuit. We're going to file a lawsuit. So, and the reason is because if you go to court for the a side that is bringing the lawsuit, they can sue for damages, both real and imaginary. And it's the imaginary damages. I call it imaginary. The court has a different word for it. But the real damages, the attorney cannot get a big fee. So let's say I sold you a car, and the car had a problem that you had to replace the engine. Well, an engine in a car today is $3,000 or $4,000, something like that, for an engine, and then the labor of removing and replacing. So the lawsuit would be that, okay, the court says you've got to replace the engine, and but the attorney can't get big fees out of that, because that is actual damages. Where they get big fees is pain and suffering. Well, in binding arbitration, you cannot sue for pain and suffering. You can only sue for actual damages. So what happens is the attorney tells the person bringing the lawsuit that I can't take this on contingency, and so I need a $5,000 or a $20,000 retainer, and you're going to have to pay for my time and expertise as an attorney out of your own pocket. And then whatever we get, if we get anything, but whatever we get for actual damages, you get those. But I can't take a part of that. You're going to have to pay me for my time. And so all of a sudden, the person bringing the lawsuit, it's no longer a free lunch. They're going to have to pay big money. And today, in a city the size of Richmond, Virginia, it is not possible to hire an attorney worth hiring for less than $250, and it's probably going to be a whole lot more than that an hour. And that's not for just court time. That's for all their research, their prep, their phone calls, their everything. So if you're going to bring a lawsuit today, it's hard to get away from certainly it's not possible for $10,000. It's probably going to be more like $25,000 or $50,000. And normally, if you can sue for pain and suffering, well, heck, bearing that in pain and suffering is easy. But for actual damages, not so much, because the actual damages have got to be proven. So therefore, they don't sue.
Go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
That's it. So they decide, oh, my God, I thought I could come down here and the attorney would take this on contingency. It wouldn't cost me anything. And Geiger's business would have to pay for my attorney and his attorney and all my claims and everything. Well, not going to happen that way. Win or lose, in binding arbitration, you're going to have to pay for your own attorney. And therefore, you know, they'll say, well, I don't think I want to do that.
So
let's go back to Geiger and see if we can make some kind of an accommodation here. And for those things that are real, sure, I'd pay for it. But it's the other things that you don't want to pay for.
So the arbitrator, the person, so then this binding arbitration, is this a situation where, okay, so now somebody neutral hears the case, for lack of a better term, and then rules on it?
Yeah, there's called the North American Arbitration Association, and there's a couple of others. And if it's of any real kind, normally what the people are attorneys, and or judges who are retired. And the way it works is side one picks an attorney or a arbiter, and side two picks an arbiter, and the two arbiters between the two of them pick the third. So there's one on my side, one on your side, and one is totally in the middle. And the ones on my side and your side are not necessarily on our sides. We just got to pick them.
Okay.
So we're going to pick as carefully as we can, but nevertheless, we're going to pick somebody. Hopefully, they're fairly fair. And but the third person, the deciding vote, is going to be absolutely neutral. And the odds of you getting coming up with anything other than a slam dunk provable claim and winning it don't exist. I mean, that's just not going to happen. So you have to pay for your own attorney. You also have to pay for the three arbiters, or for 1.5 arbiters. And so that if you're going to bring a lawsuit, you better be darn sure you're going to win it, and you're not going to win any pain and suffering. That's not going to happen.
And the ruling
you
cannot be
bring
appealed,
that up.
Correct?
No, cannot. Well, it's binding arbitration. You both agreed to it. So you can't take it anywhere. Whatever it is what it is.
Well, you know what? That tip alone, that principle alone, is worth more than the cost of the book.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah, the book is $18. I can assure you, you can't say hello to an attorney for $18.
That's true. And we're going to tell you how to get the book. Again, I know just by hearing what you just heard that you want the book, okay? Because, again, that was just one principle. One others, okay? And, again, the book goes into great detail, and you definitely need it if you are serious about being an entrepreneur. Let's go to the next principle. Now, you have people that have businesses, they start businesses, and they, you know, have ways in which they decide they want to run it. Principle number 48 is, if you don't run it like a corporation, it isn't a corporation. Professor?
Yes. I have students, I hardly ever have a class that when we get around to talking about incorporating a business and the various means and so on, and I've had many, many students who will say, well, with a corporation, there is no you don't have any liability because the corporation has it all. Well, yes, and a very emphatic no. You do have personal liability if you do something purely fraudulent. That the corporate structure is not going to protect you from out-and-out fraud. Most folks understand that, and so they say, well, I understand that, but you can't, short of that, that's not the case. Well, again, yes, and another emphatic no. A corporation, be it an LLC, limited liability corporation, or C corp, or an S corp, or a variety of other rather obscure ones, I won't go into, but in any of the corporate structures, there are a whole bunch of rules that you have to follow. So you have to pay your corporate tax to renew the corporation every year. You incorporate in a state, not necessarily the state that you're primarily doing business in. So a lot of people know that for years and years, Delaware was a favorite state to incorporate in. And so General Motors, their primary place of operation was Detroit, Michigan for many, many years, incorporated in Delaware. Now, they did business in Delaware, but it was a tiny, tiny fraction of the corporate business. But essentially, they were incorporated in Delaware. Well, every year you have to renew the corporate structure, and the costs are fairly modest. That's why they incorporated in Delaware, because Delaware's corporate structures were very kind of loosey-goosey, and they didn't cost you a lot to incorporate there. And when I say loosey-goosey, I don't mean anything evil about them. It's just that you could if you were going to build cars, you could put in there all kinds of things that you were going to build items for people to sell. So if you started out building cars and you ended up building sewing machines or surfboards, you were still covered. In some states, you would not be covered. But so that's why I say they're very broad. However, if you fail to pay your incorporation, if you don't hold yearly or quarterly corporate meetings, if you don't take corporate minutes, if you have not set it up where there really is a president and a vice president and a secretary of the corporation, if you don't do any of those things, you're not a corporation. So if you go trotting along for a whole bunch of years and then you decide, well, I'm not going to bother with paying that that corporation. Nobody really knows whether I pay it or not, which is true. Then so you don't do it. And then you get sued. I will assure you one of the first things that the lawyer on the other side is going to do is find out whether your corporate documents are all up to date. And if they're not, you're personally liable.
Everybody, my special guest is Professor Joseph Iger, author of the fabulous book Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 102 Business Principles. We're going through the book Principle by Principle. You're getting an education today. Class is in session once a month. And, I want you to tell all of your newer friends and make sure that you get the book. We're going to tell you about how you can get the book. Matter of fact, after this next principle, we'll tell you exactly how you can get the book because, again, when you're in business, especially if you're just starting out, you need a map. You need a compass. You need somebody to take you by the hand, show you the ropes, because it's not just a ABC 1-2-3 thing. There are a lot of things involved. There are contracts, there are lawyers, there, you know, just you name it. And if you're not prepared for it, then you'll be out of business within the first year, guaranteed. Professor, next principle is, and I love it, do the right thing. You know, it seems like a moral principle. Do the right thing. Could you talk about that?
Yeah. Everybody wants to do that, or at least the vast majority of us do. I guess there's a few out there who don't. But the question always comes up now, precisely how do you do that? Is there some kind of a principle or some kind of a system, a method that you can put in place that the odds are that you're going to do the right thing? We're not just talking about your relationships to dealing with other people, your relationships with dealing with corporations, with advertising agencies, with all kinds of people that you have to. So how do you do that? You know, it's difficult to say how you're going to do that. Because the challenges are so disparate. Some are really easy. Others are not. How do you do that? And I think there is a very, very simple principle that you can ask yourself, and if you answer it and then do it correctly, you will, generally speaking, with very, very, very few exceptions, you will, in fact, do the right thing. And I don't have a clue what your challenge will be. And here is the principle. Take the long view. In other words, let's do a simple one. Let's say that you're selling some people concrete for a little structure of building that they have, and this is for the foundation of it. And you take the long view. What does that mean? That means that you say to yourself, how do I make this company, this person happy with what we're going to do, with the pricing, with the service, with the delivery, with the product, and all of that, not just today, but 10 years from today. So when they look back at it, they can say, yeah, I got a square deal, I got good service, they did what they said they were going to do, and so on. So how do you do that? I'll give you another one. Let's say you're running a hardware store, and some lady comes in, and she said, my husband sent me down here. I was told that I had to get a drill. Well, you could sell her a drill, a corded drill, for $30. That's a perfectly good drill, very, very good drill, however, for light duty. It's lightweight, which for her would be better because it's not some great big heavy thing that's, it's hard to use. Or you could sell her a, let's say, a DeWalt, which is a commercial one made for people, workmen, that's a hammer drill. The darn thing weighs 5 pounds, but I'll tell you what, it doesn't make any difference whether you're going through a concrete wall or you're drilling a hole in balsa wood. That sucker will put it through.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the heavy one costs $350. She's going to have a hard time using it. Now, admittedly, if her husband is a tradesman, he'll be able to use that sucker for years and years and years. And if he drops it off a two-story building, not to worry. Just go down, pick it up, plug the sucker back in, and away you go. But the light-duty one, not so much. So which one are you going to sell her? How are you going to decide? Maybe you ought to ask her what you're going to do with it. And let's say she says, well, we're moving into a new house, and I've got to put up some pictures, and we're going to a door here and a drawer there and so on. Well, what are you going to sell her? She wouldn't know. If you told her it was $350 or it was $28, she wouldn't have a clue. Both of them are fine until she gets home. And then at some point, somebody's going to say, you bought a what? You paid how much? And you're having a hard time hauling that thing around because it does, in fact, weigh 5 pounds. And when you pull the trigger, it shivers the whole house. Well, that's what I did. That's what he said. I just said I needed the drill. Well, at some point, she's going to say, well, that lousy SOB sold me down the river. And if you sold her the other one, she's going to be happy with it. And she goes home and somebody says, who's a workman, and says, well, how come you have that little Black & Decker drill? Don't you want something that will hold up? And she'll say, well, heck, this works fine for me. I'm just using it once a month. And so she's happy. You take the long view. And 10 years from now, when she needs to, she's building a new extension to her house, and she's got to buy $30,000 worth of construction material, she'll likely come back to you because you treated her right. And if you sold her that $350 one, she will not come back, and she'll tell everybody to avoid you like the plague.
You know what? Even as I'm listening to you, give the example of the lady in the drill, it reminds me of commercials that I used to see growing up. When you would see these commercials, the advertising was really great, and the people in the commercials, the customer service was always, it's advertising. They're trying to get you to come
sure.
to their establishment. The advertisement, the people in the commercials were always pleasant. They always greeted you with a smile, and you genuinely thought, looking at the commercials, that these people really cared about the customer. And you grow up, and in many cases, you find out that you go to some establishments and you realize that for the employees, it's just a job, and you're looking for that smile, you're looking for that customer service, you're looking for that example that you just gave where the salesperson says to the lady, no, you don't need that one, here, take this one, this will work just fine, it's only $30, and it appears that now there is a push towards getting back to customer service, because somewhere along the line in the last few decades, it appears that in some industries, customer service has been lost. Have you noticed that push back towards customer service?
Well, it's pure practical. It's not just it's going back to customer service. In the last 10 years, some 15 years maybe, we've got a lot more options. Now, the lady can buy the drill from the hardware store, but now there are national Home Depots all over the place. In addition to that, she can go online and buy it at eBay. There are lots and lots of options. And I think what happened is people have finally figured out that if you treat folks right, they're going to stay with you. And if you don't, they're going to go elsewhere. When I was in the airplane business, there was we had to buy radios, of course, for airplanes, and it was not unusual, even for a small airplane, to have $20,000 invested in a radio package. I mean, we're not talking about just a little handheld here thing. There's some pretty sophisticated equipment. And when I first went in the business, there was a manufacturer called King Radio. And one of the problems with radios back in the old tube days, tube radios, and then even transistors, not so much now, but back then, an airplane is a very hostile environment. It gets hot sitting in the sun. It vibrates like blazes when the engine's running. It's not a very nice place for a radio to live. So they were dying with some regularity. And one of the new manufacturers was called King Radio. And historically what happened is when the radio died, you took it out of the airplane, or you went to a place and they took it out of the airplane, and a week or two later you got it back. And in the meantime, you didn't have the radio there. Well, if it was a certain kind, it could be a critical deal where the whole darn airplane was not usable because your darn radio was sick in the hospital. Well, King Radio came up with a new service deal. And what their deal was is with their dealers, if you took your airplane, taxied it up to a King Radio dealer and you had King Radios there, they would drop whatever they were doing. Didn't make any difference what it was. And go fix your radio. If it took them 10 hours to find the problem that cost 15 cents to replace and 30 minutes, and your shop time was $20 an hour, so at most radio places, but most manufacturers, the shop would get paid $10.15, not a King. King, you would get paid $110.15 because they pay, or rather $210.15 because they paid whatever it took to find the problem. Therefore, the shop knew that if it took them a while to find the problem, they were going to get paid. They would have a happy customer. They'd pat them on the head and say, "You're on the way, no cost." And their customer was happy. Everybody was happy. King got ripped off from time to time. But what happened was in the 20 years I was in the business, King went from a tiny also-ran to owning the business. They drove everybody out. It's not that they had, they were tough dealers. They were just the opposite. It was not that they had better equipment. Frankly, they didn't. Some of the others had more advanced equipment. But if you had an airplane and your radio went down, you knew you could go to your King dealer. Very often they would remove yours, put a loaner in, and say, "You're on your way," 15 minutes later. And when you got it back, there would be no cost and it'd work. And King ran everybody out of business exclusively on their warranty. It's kind of like the Zippo warranty. You know, if you had a Zippo lighter and you dropped it on the concrete and a concrete truck ran over it and squashed it, you could send it back to Zippo and they'd send you a brand new lighter and say, "We're sorry this thing did not tolerate that concrete truck running over it, but here's your new lighter."
You know what, Professor? I was going to tell people how to get your book after that last principle, but this is just a perfect segue. Everybody, I know you're waiting to find out how to get this book, and I guarantee you we're going to tell you how to do that, just that. But moving into Chapter 7, which is the chapter is actually titled Starting a Business, principle number 50 is successful business must be customer-driven. Seems like a perfect segue from just the last statements that we've been talking about, the last principle. Again, successful business must be customer-driven. Professor?
Yeah, basically what you try to do is you ask yourself, what's good for the customer? And if whatever you do is good for the customer, it makes the customer happy, it solves their wants, needs, and desires in a permanent long-term way, or as permanent and as long-term as it's possible, you will be successful in keeping your customers happy. You may not necessarily make a profit, but that's your problem because you didn't do a good enough job of controlling your costs and setting a price on the product to start with. There are some products that price is very, very important, and there's a whole bunch of products that it's really not all that important. Now, the customers will all tell you that it's that important, but in fact, it's not. And the way you can see that that's an absolute truism is looking at the cars that drive down the street. From a purely transportation standpoint, you're going to have a hard time trying to convince me that Ford Focus will get you from point A to point B in a less desirable way than a $150,000 Mercedes-Benz. Both of them are air-conditioned. Both of them handle reasonably well. They drive down the street. Now, maybe the Mercedes will be a little quieter. It may do this or that slightly better. But does it do it 10 times better? I don't think so. Now, there are other reasons that people buy Mercedes-Benz, and they wouldn't buy a Ford Focus if you gave it to them. They wouldn't be seen in it. But that doesn't have anything to do with transportation. That has to do with a whole lot of other things. So what you try to do is figure out what does your customer want and how are you going to keep them happy. And so you decide, you figure out what makes your customer happy, and therefore the desires, the wants, needs, and desires of a customer is what drives your business. And you should, on the part of wants, you should always precede that with perceived wants, because what people perceive as the case is may not be in fact the case, but that's how they perceive it. And so you need to satisfy that perceived want, and you need to make sure that they are happy, and if they are, you will be successful. You just need to price for that. Just like Mercedes does not care what Ford prices the Ford Focus at. They could care less. And the same for Ford. They don't care a whit about how Mercedes prices there. They also, the people who price the Ford Focus, don't care what Lincoln prices the Lincoln Mark 8 or 9 or whatever the new one is. They couldn't care less. Doesn't make any difference because it's a different market, and they're trying to make their customers happy.
Everybody, my special guest is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, author of the fabulous book, Entrepreneurial Success, 102 Business Principles. I know you're enjoying this interview. I know I am as well. Professor, let's squeeze in one more before we start telling people how they can get the book, and I want them to know about the other ventures that you have going on. This is Next Principle 51 is very, very important. They are all important, but I think that when people are dreaming about starting a business, that this principle is just probably not one that enters into them, is not a part of the dream, but it better be a part of your reality when you wake up and start the business if you want to avoid problems. And number 51 is, a policy and procedures manual will prevent many problems. Professor Guy?
Yeah, that's one that all big businesses have. If you go to work for Home Depot, they're going to set you down for, I don't know, 8 hours or maybe more, and you go through their policies and procedures manual online, and you read a little paragraph or so, and then they ask you a bunch of questions to make sure you actually read it, and you have to answer the questions right, otherwise you can't proceed to the next. Now, for a great big company, that's they can afford to do that. Small companies can't afford to digitize it and go through all that. What we small companies usually have, if we have anything, is we have a written policies and procedures manual. And very often what happens, if there is one at all, which very often there is not, but if there is one at all, when a person gets hired on, they say, well, show up tomorrow morning, and by the way, here's our policies and procedures manual. Read it at home whenever you can, which pretty well guarantees it will not be read. A policies and procedures manual merely tells everybody how you're going to run the business, what the ground rules are, how you set yourself up for a vacation, what hours do we work, what the breaks are, and on and on and on, all kinds of things. It can be, it can be 8 or 10 pages. It can be a lot bigger than that. And but you absolutely need it, and it's one of those things that when people start businesses, I would put money on it that if 10% of them have policies and procedures manuals when a small business started, I would fall over in a dead faint. I suspect it's more between 2 and 3%. Virtually none of them do. But it's simple to do. And the way you do it is wherever you work now, if they have one there and they gave it to you, and they should have, you take it home and you rat hole it. You keep it. And whenever you get around to starting your own business, you've hopefully worked for one or two or three different companies, and they all have these things, and you've kept them. So you take them and you go through them. You look at how they set it up, and you just modify it, essentially copy it. You probably ought not to copy it word for word, although it's not a bad idea to do. You need to get their permission to do it. And then you get this down, and when somebody comes to work for you, you say, and you decide to hire them, the first thing they do before they go out on a sales call, on the line, or whatever they're going to do, is they sit down and read that thing. And when they get through reading it, they sign it and date it, and you give them another one for them to take home. But you pay them to read the book. Because if you don't, and you ever have a problem, and you're in California, you will get sued, and you will lose, because the employee's lawsuit or lawyer will say, well, sure, they may have given, I don't remember whether they did client here, they don't remember, maybe they did, hell, I don't know if they did, they told them to go home and read it. Well, come on, give me a break already. And the judge will say, we find in favor of the employee. Guaranteed, you will lose every single time. However, if you say when that happens and they start in the court, your attorney says, now, Mr. Judge or Ms. Judge, we have here a copy of the policies and procedures manual signed by Jane or John Doe and dated here. And they initialed every single page. And we paid them to read this. And the policies and procedures manual clearly states that you cannot do what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? The company just won that one. And probably what would actually happen is it'd never get that far. Because your attorney would call up the other side, the employee's attorney, and say, hey, you understand now that we do have a signed, dated copy, initialed on every page by John or Jane Doe, which said they read it. And furthermore, we gave them a copy at the time, and we photocopied the one we gave them with their signature on it and ours and the dates. Oh, really? I think we're going to drop this lawsuit.
Yes, I think so. Everybody.
So, and it's not being sneaky. It's being just the opposite. It's being absolutely upfront. The ones who are sneaky are the ones who have a policies and procedures manual and give it to them and as they walk out the door after their first day. And it may make it out the door and it may get thrown in the trash before it gets to their car. They're the sneaky ones because the poor employee doesn't have a clue what the heck's in it. But if you do it my way, they know what's in it, and if they don't like it, they got paid for that hour or 2 hours or whatever it took to read it. And if they don't like it, they say, I quit, and they still get paid.
You know, the thing that I really love about this book, Professor, is that people get the nuts and the bolts of starting a business, you know, entrepreneurship, and it's these principles you're hearing. And now that you're hearing them, you can't say that you didn't hear them. Okay, so if ever you encounter any one of these situations that Professor Geiger has outlined in these principles in this book, you won't be able to say, I didn't know. Okay, but so that you have this as, you know, by your side, and when you get it, because I know you're going to get it, don't just put it on the shelf. You got to read it, okay? It's an excellent, excellent book. I mean, I've read it several times. It's an enjoyable book to read. If you love business and you're an entrepreneur, you'll love it too. So, Professor, how can people get this book? I know there are people out there that are listening and say, I want a copy. How can they get it?
Well, they can go to my website, theroadtothetop.com, and order it there. And I'll ship it out to you and sign it. It's $17.95 plus $4 worth of $3.99 to ship it to you, which is exactly the same as Amazon charges. Or you can go to Amazon and do the same thing. The only difference is when they ship it out, they can't sign it. Other than that, it's the same.
And with that, they get a cash flow forecast as well, true?
There's one there. You could get a cash flow forecast, it is $15. And when you get that, it's a very thorough one. And when you get it, you can I just send me the money and I do it the same way. Just click on it, and you can do it online. And I download it and send it to your email address, and you have it immediately.
Everybody, each one of these principles is worth more than the cost of the book. So if you are the type of person that likes a deal, you know, this book is not a deal. It's a steal. I mean, you really can benefit so much and save yourself so much headache, so much money. I mean, just and increase the odds. You're going to increase the odds that your business is successful just by reading the principles in this book. It would make a great gift for those of you who are listening, and you might not be an entrepreneur, but you might have a child who is, or a family member, or just a friend, somebody that you know. It's an awesome, awesome book, and they will come back, and they will thank you for sure. Professor's got a lot of other things going on, too. Professor, we've only got a couple of minutes. I don't know if you have time to share about the new book that you just wrote.
Yeah, first of all, let me say that the reason for the 102 principles is because I tried to make them actionable. I've got a pretty sizable library of business books, and in very few of them are the things they talk about there something that a small business can actually put in action. Mine are. You can put it in action. What I'm also doing, I just finished a book called Finding a Career for Life. It's written for young adults, high schools, juniors and seniors, freshmen, sophomore, and college, and it's to help them make better career choices. So it's Finding a Career for Life. It's also on Amazon, and same way you can get it through my website, although it's not up there because we're doing some website work right now, and so that'll be up in probably tomorrow or the day after. And it's a great big $9.95. It's all it costs, plus, again, the $3.99 to ship it to you. And what's going on now for college kids is that they're getting out of college and then they're finding out there are no jobs. There have been a number of surveys ran, and what they found out that over half, normally it runs about 52-53% of college graduates, within 6 months when they get out, find out that they are working at jobs that require no college education at all, or they're simply not working. And so they spent 4 years, God knows how much money, and they would have been better off had they just gone to work someplace right out of high school for all the good it did them, because they wouldn't have the darn college debt. So this is a book to try to help young people make better choices. And I will guarantee you, if you have any of your own children or in your own family or extended family and friends, that this will be a big, big eye-opener for them. It'll probably be a big eye-opener for you. It tells you what are the best-paying jobs and the worst, what jobs the people who are doing them are the happiest, and what they are, which ones they are not happy with it, what cities are the best cities to be in and which ones are not the best ones to be in, all kinds of very hard, again, actionable information. What are the best colleges? And how do you make that decision? Which colleges are the students the happiest at? And which are they not the happiest? Which ones do they think that they're getting a great education and which ones they don't think that? It's all there. It's only 85 pages long, but it's a lot of information.
You know, Professor, that just reminds me of one of your principles. Decisions are data-driven. So
right.
When young kids are coming out of college or high school and they're not sure, you know, which way they want to go, just having that book and having that information, that data there, can really, really help them with the decisions that they're making.
Yeah, it can, and there's three tables in it to how to pick the best college for them, how to pick the best career for them, and how to pick the best city for them. And you just fill in the blanks, as it were, on the table, and add up the results, and bingo, there you are. And it's going to be a real eye opener. I did it myself and tried it, and on the city part, it was a surprise to me. But thinking back on it, I thought, you know, I think my table is right, and my first impression was wrong.
You know, Professor, now I know, I just want everybody to know, this isn't a case, he's not making a case of saying don't go to college, you know.
No.
But
I am making the case is, do not believe, it is a myth, that if you get a college degree, you will therefore get a good job. That is not true in a lot of cases. Now, it is true in some, but it is not true in a lot of cases. And those cases where it's not true, had they done it differently, their result would have been different.
Everybody, I know I have to be respectful of Professor's time. I could go on, and we could go on and on and on. But if you want more and you don't want to wait until next month when Professor comes back, get the book, okay? Get the book. Get up to speed. We're on Chapter 7. You can get the book, and you can, again, go down the book principle by principle. I'm certain, though, but if you get the book today, by the time Professor comes back on, you'll have finished it, because you won't be able to put the book down, okay? But you'll have the benefit, even once you've read it, of hearing Professor Geiger come on and personally go through the principles with him. So, Professor, I want to thank you so much, again, for this awesome work that you're doing. I mean, the book is just a must for entrepreneurs, the new book for young people that are, you know, trying to find out what they want to do. I mean, we know, again, back to the principle, decisions must be data-driven, and you have, you know, given the data, and, you know, it's a wonderful work that you're doing. I mean, you're still putting out books, and you're still educating, and I thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it, and I encourage everybody to get the book, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 102 Business Principles. Professor, one more time, if you could just tell them how they can get it.
Go to my website, theroadtothetop.com. You can get both of them there, or you can go to Amazon, and you can get both of them there.
Any parting words, Professor, before we go?
Buy the books. You'll like it. You'll like it. And if you're going to start a business, for God's sakes, buy the book and read it before, because I guarantee you it will save you money. I wish I had had that when I started. I would be a lot of money ahead. And I don't mean in the thousands. I'm talking about fairly serious money. Because that's what it cost me to learn these things, was hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, I can think of one mistake that I made that cost over $4 million back when $4 million was a whole lot of money.
Wow.
One mistake. Just one.
One mistake. And that could have been one principle.
Well, it is. It's one principle. And had I done that principle, I would have been way, way ahead. Or more ahead. Hitter.
Everybody, my special guest is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, again, author of the book Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 102 Business Principles. The name of your new book, Professor?
Finding a Career for Life.
Finding a Career for Life. Everybody,
yep.
Make sure you get the books. Okay, so you know how to get them. Okay, Professor will be on again in a month. Okay, and so by the time he comes on again, you should have gotten those books, and you'll have the awesome pleasure of going through Entrepreneurial Success principle by principle with Professor Geiger, and you can call in and ask any questions that you like. Professor, I really appreciate your time, sir. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for all of the information that you've shared, all of the teaching that you've done. Your teaching goes on, and we're very blessed to have an opportunity to sit and listen and soak up all of this information. Really appreciate you.
Thank you very much, and I enjoy it too. See you next week or next month.
Okay. I might have to bring you back next week. Okay, everybody.
Okay.
That's Professor Joseph Geiger. Definitely get the book. It's Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top. That's the book that we're going through principle by principle. And you know what? I have to interview him on the other book as well, because, again, this information is just too valuable, and, you know, that's what we do. We spread it, okay? We get the information, and Professor Geiger, again, is one of the people in the community that is he can make your life a lot easier just by getting this book, okay? If you are an entrepreneur, it's not a question of should you get the book. You need the book, okay? Okay, not an option. I mean, you need the book. So just like your car needs gas, you need this
book.
There you go. So make sure. All right. Until the next time, my name is Jawanza. His name is Professor Joseph T. Geiger. Entrepreneurs, get ready, because you get this book, I guarantee you your entrepreneurial life is going to change. And before I go, I want to say this: the book is also their life principles as well. I guarantee you, you're going to see some life principles in there. I make decisions oftentimes now. I refer back to principles in the book, not just for business, but for life. I mean, so there's no downside. Get the book. You won't regret it. My name is Jawanza. Until the next time, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Take care.
Bye for now.